Thanks for checking out the Reveal Vineyard podcast. Our mission is simple. Find God, find others, find yourself. That's it. We hope through these conversations, your spirit will be stirred. For more information on Reveal, you can visit our website at www.revealvineyard.com.
Well, hey, you're probably aware that there's this huge movie coming out I think it's Friday, the day before Valentine's Day. It's called 50 Shades of Grey. Don't act surprised, like, I never heard that one before. You'd heard it before. It's based on a book, topped the bestseller list around the world. 100 million copies have been sold, translated into 52 different languages, set a record in the UK for the fastest-selling paper book of all times. The movie release is so popular that there are entire communities of women, especially, who are buying out movie theaters to go and to watch this together. I know Marley Park is putting on some big thing like that. Pre-ticket sales. It has been the fastest-selling pre-ticket sales, fastest-selling rated R film in Fandango's history. So it's obviously something that culture is very interested in and that culture is discussing, both inside and outside of the church. And so to coincide with the movie release, we decided that we're going to put our own spin on this and we're going to bring the topic of sex into the church to see what God has to say about it. Now, as a side note, as your pastor, my advice to you would be to save your money and to instead invest that money and that time into writing your own love story and avoid what that's going to put before your eyes. Ladies, especially, you should, in my opinion, there is no way that you should be taking your man, boyfriend, husband to watch a movie like that. It plants images that do not get erased from the man's brain. Ask him about it. If they're not honest, I'll tell you about it, all right? So my advice to you as a pastor, invest that money into your own love story. It will go much further, all right? Now, this might seem like an odd topic for a Sunday morning, but I've been in the ministry for 25 years. I've done my share of counseling. I've seen how this topic of sex has gripped culture both inside and outside of the church, and we're not doing anyone any favors by leaving this topic outside of the church walls because sex is everywhere. It's on every TV screen, print, internet, front page of magazines. It's written about, it's sung about. All we hear about is sex, but usually we only hear it in sound bites, and no one talks about the rest of the story and what's taking place behind the scenes and some of the damage it's doing under the covers. Now, let me give you a disclaimer very quickly. This topic is not a topic that is embarrassing to me. When I grew up, the topic of sex was spoken about very openly. It was no big deal. In my family, because of the way I was raised, sex was spoken about openly. It was no big deal. Sex to me is not a dirty subject whatsoever. I don't think it's a dirty subject to God. I don't think God's embarrassed about it. God's seen you naked. He can handle it. All right? So nothing to be embarrassed about. We are a call it what it is family. We were growing up. We are in my family as well. In other words, it wasn't a wee-wee, it wasn't a wang-wang, it wasn't a Mr. Noodle, it wasn't a ding-dong, okay? Now, let me finish all my disclaimers before you cut me out and think this guy's not even a Christian. All right, let me finish my disclaimer. When our kids were little, my wife's mom was changing one of the kids' diapers, and she said something about his titier. And I was like, what is a titier? And her parents are Pentecostal pastors, and I was like, you mean his penis? And the gasp just was like, I was like, it doesn't make you a sex fiend to say the word, all right? I read something on the internet just yesterday. It was a mother asking, what other name should I tell my child to call his penis? I'm like, how about his penis, all right? There's nothing dirty about it. Now, I know some of you, it's making you uncomfortable, but like, you don't call your baby's nose his sniffer. It's not like, hey, make sure you keep your grabber claw off the stove. It's a hand, right? So that's just a little disclaimer. If you're a guest, or if you've only been here a couple times, I would ask that you give grace, because this is an odd subject to come in on for the first church service. I get it. You don't know my sense of humor. I get it. But please do not prejudge me. Don't prejudge our church. We are a Bible-believing church. We preach the Bible. We teach the Bible. We cling to it. Jesus is the way of salvation. And what I'm telling you is go back and listen to some of my other messages online, all right? You'll get a full idea of what we're about. But I realize it's an odd topic, okay? I realize some of you, you'll be upset by the discussion that's been brought inside of the church. Some of you, you're going to send me nasty emails. Some of you are going to question whether or not I should be a pastor. And then there's a majority of you that this was the only Sunday in your life that you could not wait to get to church, right? You were speedy. Your husband, you know, if you're married, your husband's like, come on, we're going. What are you talking? We haven't been in 3 weeks, 6 weeks. This is the week we're going. And then you found the subject, and now it all makes sense to you. All right, so let's see what God has to say about the topic. Here's some good news. A God is for sex. I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning. All right, look at Genesis 3, 23 and 25. Here's what God says in his word. Then man said, this at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. Possibly one of the greatest verses in the Bible right there. Men and women were naked before one another. Now, the Bible tells us to be a doer of the word and not merely a hearer. So here's your homework. Those of you that are married, you need to go home and be a doer of that verse. Ladies, it may be the only time your husband says, the pastor said we have to, all right? Believe me, man, I'm throwing you a little, I'm giving you some ammunition here. Now, as we talk about this subject, it's important to know that sex was never, never intended to only be a physical act that took place between man and woman. Our Creator, when He created us, as you see in this verse, that there is a leaving of parents and a coming together of one another, a clinging to one another, where two individuals become one individual. All right, this is God's ideal for us in this idea of sex. Now, that's the way that God designed it, that it was a meshing together of two individuals, body and soul. Now, in our culture, we have separated body and soul to extreme measures. I'll give you an example. One camp says that the soul is spiritual, but the body is evil, and the less that we talk about it, the better. Sex is a basic need that we have to do, but we don't need to discuss it because basically the flesh and all of the flesh is evil. Now, through most of history, this has been the camp that most churches have fallen into. This idea that the flesh is basically evil, sex is something that is a necessity, but nothing that we need to talk about. So much so, a 4th century scholar, early theologian who helped translate the Bible into Latin Vulgate, so much so that Jerome, St. Jerome, said this. He said that any husband who is too passionate of a lover with his wife is committing adultery. Just put a scarlet letter right there on me, right? I mean, think about that. This is in the church because we've separated. The flesh is evil. And so in the Middle Ages, sex was in the church was usually considered at best a concession to the weakness of the flesh, and were often categorized as venial sins, that it's something that is needed, it's permissible, but it's not the best for us. That was the view of the early church in this idea of sex. Now, the other camp is that your body is just a body. It's just a bunch of flesh, therefore, do whatever you want to your body. That because it's just flesh, it has no attachment to it, it's just a slab of meat, do whatever you want. That we are just another of the animals in the animal kingdom. And so go with your impulses. Do what feels right for you. If you have a sexual craving, fulfill it. They would say, well, if you're thirsty, you drink. If you're hungry, you eat. If you're horny, you have sex. I will never say that word horny again in church besides that time, but that's just it. Not my favorite word, but it's what they would say. Now, here's where this thinking has led us to, okay? Pay attention. This view of that it's just sex, it's just flesh, so do whatever you want to give yourself to. Young people, hear me very clearly. It says this, that I can surrender myself unconditionally to you, and I want you to surrender yourself unconditionally to me in sexual activity, so we are both open and naked before one another, unconditional surrender, but I need to keep my options open. Because it's just a physical act. And here's where it has led us to a history-proven recipe for pain. We'll put it on the screen. Unconditional intimacy with conditional commitment. This has been a history recipe for pain. Unconditional intimacy between two people with conditional commitment, right? Eb and Chris, I want you to come up here. I told them to come up. I didn't tell them what I was going to be doing. It leads to pain every time. Unconditional intimacy with conditional commitment. Why? Because God is against us and God's trying to punish us? No. Because God's original intent for sexual activity was more than just two bodies coming together, but it was a meshing of body and soul where the two individuals become one. And in God's recipe, there is no way to have unconditional intimacy in sex and have conditional commitment. It cannot happen. Go back and put up that verse again of Genesis 3. The two shall become one flesh. And this is our first image of how God has orchestrated this idea of marriage and sex. I mean, do you want to know why things get difficult in a dating relationship when sex takes place outside of the relationship? Because it was never what God intended. God intended that there would be a meshing of two people, that there would be an imprinting of sorts that would take place on two individuals, and that those individuals would be it. But see, we've ruined it because we said, well, it's just the flesh, and so we do whatever we want. You guys come over a little closer. Now, Evan and Crystal are married. Let's face each other, all right? Now, the two, hold that for me, shall become one flesh. Here's what this, just keep hanging on, buddy. You're going to owe me big after this one. The two shall become, I'm just helping a brother out. That's all I'm doing. Excuse me. Now, the two shall become one flesh. Put your arm down. Watch where your hand's going. All right? This is the idea that God's had. I'm just going to do this for the rest of the service. This is the idea of what God had when sexual activity enters into the relationship. Here's the problem. He's like, oh, we shut up for a minute. You're distracting me. Sex is supposed to be a binder where the two... He said, I'm working over here. That the two become one. Here's what happens. You want to know why it's so painful? I hope you don't have any hair on your arms. You know why it's painful? Sorry about that, brother. When two people then pull apart from one another? Because it was never intended to happen. When the two come together, there is a meshing together of not just body. That's easy. But there was supposed to be a two becoming one. And when it occurs, and then there is a break apart, when the relationship is over, there is always a wound that takes place. Now, Sheila, come up here and help them out of this duct tape. Eb would probably want to stay there, but I won't let him. There is always a wound that takes place. Now listen, those that think they can engage, oh, Eb. Eb, next time I'm getting even better. Let me have the duct tape. Oh no, now we're in trouble. Give your wife a kiss for being a good sport. Thank you, thank them. Not done with the duct tape, those of you that are wondering. What's that? Oh, you're right. Sorry. I don't want to tell you what I was doing when I wrote that. All right. This message was involved. I had to do research. That's all I'm saying. Now, listen what Paul says about this same subject, because he brings it up to the church at Ephesus when he brings it up in Ephesians chapter 5. We'll put that up. It says, for this reason, a man will leave his father and his mother and be united to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh, right? That's just what we read. But notice it's in quotations because he's quoting from Genesis that we just read. It's when God brought Adam and Eve together. It was God's image of two individuals becoming one. And so Paul is quoting from Genesis, right? Now we can track with him. We're like, all right, Paul, I get what you're saying. I get it. The two shall become one. I'm tracking with you. And then he says this, that this is a profound mystery. All right, Paul, I get it. I see what you're saying. Two, man and woman, they come together. There's a meshing together. No longer two, but they're one. It's a mystery. Things we can't fully explain. I'm tracking with you, Paul. And then he says this. This is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. Well, of course you were, Paul. I mean, what did you think we thought you were talking about? Right? That's odd to me. It's like he took a left turn. It'd be like me telling a friend, which I would not, but man, Sheila and I have been married for 23 years, and our love life is better than it's ever been. It's like mind-blowing activity that's going on. It is so, I've never experienced anything like this. You know what I'm talking about, right? Jesus. That's what that's like. It's like, Paul, what? Here's what Paul was saying, and I got to move because I got a lot to cover. Paul was saying that this idea of marriage, two becoming one flesh, in a real way, it's like our union with Christ. That it's not just us as an individual coming to Christ, but we are grafted into him. Right? Where Jesus said, I'm the vine, you are the branches. We're grafted into him. It's just not two pieces of flesh coming together. And Paul uses this as this idea that, all right, man and woman come together, but that's like we are with Christ. He's showing that it was always meant to be more than just two bodies coming together. That it's a deeper component. Those of you that are single, those of you that are young. That's why there's so much pain that is placed on this subject when we engage in it outside of its normal bounds of what God has prescribed. It's not because God doesn't want you to have fun, but it's because God wants you, when the right person comes, there is an imprinting that takes place, a meshing that takes place, and that it lasts for a lifetime. Now we're going to look at the subject a bit more. It's called 50 Shades of Solomon. We're going to look at the Song of Solomon. It's a book in the Old Testament. If you've never read it, it might make you blush a little bit. It's kind of blunt. It's very poetic, but well done. So let me give you some context of the book. Written somewhere around 965 BC, so about 1,000 years before Christ was around. You can read this book from two perspectives. One, it's an allegory for God and Israel, Christ and the church, or you can read it as it's a love story between two individuals. We're going to take it as a love story between two individuals. Now, let me just tell you, this series will apply for everyone, to everyone. If you're single, it's going to apply to how you should position yourself for the best that God has for you, how you protect yourself. If you're married, we can always work on our relationship, including the relationship in the bedroom. Now, if you're 70 and you're single and you're thinking your love days are behind you, my word to you would be, never give up hope. God can do anything. All right, moving right along. Some of you are like, yeah, it's long past that. Now, today we're going to talk about attraction. If you're single, what qualities should you build in yourself to find the right partner? What qualities should you be looking for in another one? And here's why. If you're single, again, I just don't want this to be a sex thing that's only to married people. But if you're single, you know that you can't believe everything that someone tells you, right? Every good-looking guy or good-looking girl that's going to come along, you can't believe everything that they say. You have to understand that, especially if you've ever done online dating, that there are two things. There's always what was said, and then there's always what was really meant. Got an example? Go ahead and run that.
I'm looking for a woman who enjoys the simple things in life. Long walks, sharing a grande Starbucks, sitting at home watching television. You should know that I'm unemployed and rarely have money.
My name is Sheila. I'm 5'1" and 40-ish. My name is Sheila. I'm 5'1". I'm 49 and will be 50 in 2 days.
I'm a down-home guy, and my number one priority in life is family. I'm 27, and I live in my mom's basement.
I love love. I'm a hopeless romantic. I look better in candlelight. Way better. Way.
I'm looking for a woman who knows how to take care of her man. I need a mommy.
Purity is really important to me. I'm saving myself for the right man.
I like a woman Who doesn't like a lot of makeup or has to get all dressed up just to go out? I'm basically a slob, and I pretty much like to wear sweatpants and wife beaters. Oh, yeah. That's sexy.
My friend Sam, bubbly, energetic, and fun. I will never shut up.
I want a man who is intuitive. A man who knows what I want before I even know what I want. I want a man who knows my deepest, most feelings. I want a man who understands that I am all kinds of crazy. And I'll love you forever. Forever. I see you.
My name's Tony, and I'm just hoping to find my best friend. My name's Tony, and I'm looking for a friend with benefits. All right.
I enjoy spending my time in the community at the local animal shelter. I mainly socialize with my cats.
Meow.
Coming out of a bad relationship, I need a safe place. My ex was kind of jealous and possessive. Yeah, I'm gonna cheat on you. Several times.
People describe me as being lovable and just a big, huggable teddy bear. I'm overweight and have more body hair than Bigfoot.
All right. If you've ever done any online dating, you know that's exactly what it's like. Singles, you can't trust everything you're going to hear. Now, if you're married, we're talking about attraction. If you're married, just because you put a ring on the finger doesn't mean you should no longer be working to attract your spouse. This should be a lifelong event, a lifelong goal that we have. So we're going to look at establishing these qualities throughout our relationship. Now, one reason for married couples, we're going to talk about this attraction thing, is because sex begins way before the bedroom, especially for women. So we're going to discuss what that looks like. We're going to look at three different qualities today. I'm going to fly through them quickly. We're going to be about 11:18 today, so we'll be out a little bit later. All right, so let's talk about what I like about you. The first quality we're going to look at, we're going to tie this back to the Song of Solomon and what all that looks like. The first thing is character. I want to read to you something from the Song of Solomon. It says, "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. Your name is like perfume poured out. No wonder all of the women love you." Now, this is my wife quoted me this on our first date. It's what she told me. I walked into the door. She said, "Kiss me with the kisses of your mouth." And I'm like, I am a godly man, right? That's what happened. And I pushed her away. And I can't blame her because look at me. I mean, you can't turn this off. So, all right. Now, look at what it says next. "Take me away with you. Let us hurry. Let the king bring me into his chambers." In other words, it's business time, right? That's what's happening. Now, let's get there quickly. Let's not delay. Hey, those of you who are married, have you ever had a "let's get there in a hurry" moment? Like the car just couldn't go quick enough, right? It's funny, your honeymoon, it's like you may have had the nicest resort booked, but any hotel would do, right? Nicest resort, Motel 6 would work for you at that moment, right? Some of you give me a hard time about driving a Prius, but let me tell you, when the Prius needs to move, the Prius can move, Jack. You know what I'm saying? And the back seats fold down, so I'm good either way. Now, we're going to see how this couple responds to one another sexually. It goes from, bounces around, from marriage on the honeymoon to courtship to their first fight to some jealousy. We're going to see how all of that kind of plays out in all of this. So look at verse 3 again. We'll put it on the screen. "Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. Your name is like perfume poured out. No wonder the young women love you." Now, what is this thing she's talking about? Your name is like perfume. Perfume was very rare back then. Even more rare was this idea of taking a bath. And so if you had perfume, it was sweet to smell. In other words, it made you more presentable before people. And I find it interesting that she said, "Your name is like this sweet-smelling perfume." It was valuable oils. Nothing cheap. what had some monetary value to it. Now, back in this culture, one's name carried a lot with it. It carried their reputation. Oftentimes, it maybe even carried their profession. It carried their character. And so for someone to say that your name is like sweet perfume, it's more than just, oh, I love to hear the name. It's that your character, who you are, your reputation is so valuable, it's like this sweet-smelling perfume. She says, no wonder all the other women love you. It's not because they had a name that attracted them. It was because through character, the other woman was like, oh man, there's something about that guy that I'm drawn to. Now, notice, ladies, it wasn't a hottie with a body that she spoke of first, okay? The very first quality she mentions is his character, that your name is like this sweet-smelling perfume. Singles, let me break something down for you. We put far too much emphasis on physical appearance these days. And it's not that physical appearance isn't important in a relationship, not what I'm saying at all. But if the driving force of your relationship is good God, he's hot, or good God, she's hot, that is not a foundation to build a lifelong relationship on. Because let me give you some bad news, what's going to happen to 20-year-old butt. Around 45, the butt's going to be dragging in the sand. Guys, let gravity and a couple children at her body and see what's going to happen then. That's nothing disrespectful to women at all. But things change. And if all we are looking at is the outward, at some point, you're going to be severely disappointed in the relationship because things do not maintain the same appearance. So this idea of looking deeper into the character of an individual is extremely important. Outward appearance, it doesn't last. Now, some of you may say, well, you know, I would like a Christian guy. Some of you single ladies. I would like a Christian guy, but I'm always attracting the wrong guys to me. Let me just say very respectfully, if you're a single woman, if you continually attract the wrong guys, let me gently ask that you evaluate your bait. Because you're not going to attract the guy you're talking about while you're in the club getting your twerk on. It's just not going to happen. You know who's going to be there. Guys, you're not going to find the woman that you probably want. Now, some of you say, well, I did. And I mean, God bless you that it happened to you. But as a whole, if you're attracting the wrong type of person, look at what you're doing. Maybe you're going after the wrong person or finding the wrong people in the wrong place. I would argue all day long that a great marriage is not only about finding the right person, but you becoming the right person. And so if you're single, use this season in your life to become the right person. Andy Stanley says this, become the person you're looking for is looking for. If you're single, that's some of the best advice I can give you. Become the person you're looking for is looking for. Now, if you're married, if you want to widen the foundation of your marriage, you want to invest in something that will pay dividend on both sides, inside and outside of the bedroom, invest in your character. Let me explain what that means. Character is this. How do you respond in a stressful situation? It's character. How do you respond in an argument? How do you sacrifice for your spouse? It's character. How do you love and correct your children? How do you speak encouragement over your family? How are you involved with your family on a daily basis? Men, I will argue with you that if we would develop a character of service and sacrifice, meaning put the kids in the bath every now and then. I don't mean put them in there and leave them. I mean actually bathe them, right? Get them ready. If you put the kids to bed, if you change a diaper, if you send your wife out because you're going to sacrifice for her to have time alone, let her see how you respond to your children with grace and with comfort and with calmness. Let her see that. Ladies, answer me this. Is there anything more sexy than a man who is actively engaged in his family? Isn't that like a big deal to you? I see it all over Facebook. Someone's playing with their babies, and nothing more sexy than a man who is playing with his children. Man, we miss this. See, we think coming to bed with a Speedo and our gut hanging over it is what's going to do it for her. Character is going to do it for her, right? The way that you invest in her, the way that you invest in your family, the way that how you speak to your children, the way that you respond in a fight, all of those things matter. So let her see you playing princess with your baby girl. Play Barbies with them. A little dress up with your child may mean a little dress down with your wife. You know what I'm saying? All right, so it all works. Character matters in the relationship, in marriage, and when you're single. Now, the second one is, we're going to got to move quickly. The second character that we see here is growing trust. We're going to see her share her insecurities, and I want to see how they love one another through this. Song of Solomon 1, 5, and 6. It says, "Dark am I, yet lovely, daughters of Jerusalem. Dark like the tents of Kedar, like the tent curtains of Solomon." Now catch this. Here's what she's saying. "My skin is extremely dark." Now in our culture, dark skin is a good thing. But back then, fair skin was what was looked up to, because it meant that you were of some noble birth and that you didn't have to work out in the sun constantly. And so if you were dark, it meant that you spent all your time in the fields working, and it wasn't desirable. And so she's coming to this relationship, the man she loves, and she says, "Look, I am self-conscious about my skin and what I look like." And then she says in verse 6, "Do not stare at me, because I am dark. Because I am darkened by the sun. My mother's sons were angry with me and made me take care of the vineyards, and my own vineyard I have neglected." She's saying, "Look, I love you, but this is difficult for me right now. Because I'm not what the world should say that I should look like, or what my body should look like, or what my skin should look like. And so I'm very self-conscious right now." And she begins to open herself up, and they begin to build trust in this. Now, ask yourself in the relationship that you're in, is it growing in trust today? Can you share more things today than you could a year ago, a month ago, 10 years ago? What does that look like? Can you trust them more today than you could a year ago? Now, what's interesting in this passage is they start with physical insecurities, which is typically how it starts, because all of us have something in our body that we don't like. You know, my butt's too big, I don't like I'm too fat, my hair is thinning, I don't like my teeth, whatever. And she begins to say, "Here's my insecurities." We were married, I was very insecure about my appearance, and my wife loved me through those insecurities. Now, I told you the story before, I'll tell you quickly. Eighth grade, walking across the desert sky, or the Deer Valley courtyard, Deer Valley Middle School, and three, four girls came the other way, and one of them I kind of had a crush on, and she says, "Hey, Dreamboat," and I got so lit up, I was like, "Oh, finally, she recognizes me," and then as I said, "Hi," she said, "Not you, Shipwreck," and that's okay, you can laugh at me, and I was devastated. My wife knows I was self-conscious about that, and she loved me through the insecurities. Man, I know it's not macho to name your insecurities, but we all have them. And so she loved me through them. Now look, I don't believe I am a dreamboat by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm a dreamboat to her, and that's all that matters. And sometimes I'm the love boat, all right, to her. That's all that matters, really. And so there's a loving through insecurities. Now, married couples, let's talk about trust in the bedroom. Whenever we speak about sex in marriage, or when we speak of no sex or a sex-deprived marriage, emotional security becomes highly relevant. Because no one wants to be involved in unconditional surrender when there is a lack of trust in the relationship. When trust is broken down, vulnerability takes a hit, and I don't know of many things that are more vulnerable than sexual activity. I mean, you're standing before one another in your birthday suit, and it is a vulnerable place. It is difficult for two people to engage in a lifelong commitment of sexual satisfaction in the marriage when trust has been eroded. And men, typically, number one on a list of women's needs is security. It's usually in the top three up there. Trust is part of that security. Let me just give you some trust breakers, all right? Keeping secrets, it's a trust breaker. Not letting your wife know what is going on inside of you, the emotions taking place. Outright lying, either partner. Avoiding bringing things up because it might rock the boat. Later they find out about it. Leaving out certain details. Flirting with other women or flirting with other men. Hidden pornography habits, or not setting boundaries with how you interact with the opposite sex. Those are all trust breakers. And when trust is eroded, the sexual satisfaction of a marriage takes a hit. Because that meshing is being yanked apart, because I've given myself to you, but now I'm not sure I can trust you, and there's that tension that takes place. Now, look at what she says here. Verse 7, she says, "Tell me, you whom I love, where you graze your flock and where you rest your sheep at midday. Why would I be like a veiled woman besides the flocks of your friends?" Here's what she's saying. a veiled woman was a woman who gave herself to men for payment. She was a prostitute. And this woman who is asking, remember, we're talking about this idea of trust. She says, look, I'm in the mood, and I love you, and I want you, but let's just take a step back here for a moment. Don't expect for a minute that I am going to be like the women who give themselves to other men for a price. Don't expect me to be what you see on the side of the roads. Don't expect me to be what you look at in online or in whatever else you see. She's kind of drawing a boundary for herself, and she's saying, this is not what I am going to be about. So let's just put the brakes on. Now, men, we can often see sex as just the physical act of sex. That's just how we're wired. But trust is far greater than simply saying, I believe what you say. Listen. Sex is, in the bedroom, I believe that you want to be with me more than any other woman in the world. I believe that your eyes are only for me. I believe that I'm the one that you're choosing out of choice, and that you don't want anyone else but me. And the problem then with pornography, and when we give ourselves to things that are just physical, that tearing takes place because the wife loses trust in us. Let me show you this big ball of duct tape. It's sticky. And if I had time, I could go through and I could touch it on everyone's shoulder. And as that's happening, every particle from someone is going to be touched. And when I touch the next person, the particles of that person will be on you and will be on you, and it could keep going. But here's the thing. The more touches this has, the less adhesion it has. Single people, when we're involved in sexual activity, the more that this happens, the less that you're going to adhere to your spouse. It's just because sex is only sex. Men, the more that we give ourselves to images and such like that, strip clubs, whatever it might be, the adhesion becomes less and less on our spouse, meaning we need more and more things, kinking the bedroom in order to get the adhesion back. But the problem is that we've looked at sex as just a physical act. And there needs to be a restructuring of our mind. It's one of the problems with pornography that no one wants to speak about. Oprah won't tell you, the magazines won't tell you, because it doesn't make money. But the more this happens, the less sticky it becomes. When I took it off, it stuck to the paper. It's falling off my hand. All right? It's one of those, it's a trust breaker in the relationship, because sex is supposed to be what joins two people together. Now, let's jump to the third one as we're running out of time. The third character, it's godly character, growing trust, and the last one is consistent encouragement. Now, I want you to look how he encourages her through her moments of insecurity and her back to him. Song of Solomon says, I liken you, my darling, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariot horses. He's like, baby, you're a horse. I said that to my wife a couple days ago, and I got elbowed. I did. I just want to see, well, what is that? It means nothing in our culture. But back then, the horse that pulled Pharaoh's chariot was typically a white horse. All the other horses were dark, black. And so she's saying, don't look at my skin. I'm dark. And he's saying, baby, you are like the finest animal that pulls Pharaoh's chariot. And some even consider this animal to be godlike. And so this was like a huge compliment, saying, you're self-conscious, but to me, you're like the finest godlike animal that pulls Pharaoh's chariot. It still doesn't sound good, but it did back then. Now look what he says, verse 10. Your cheeks are beautiful with earrings, and your neck with strings of jewels. Now listen to her response. All right, verse 13. She says, my beloved is to me a sachet of myrrh resting between my breasts. I don't even know what a sachet of myrrh is, but if that's where it rests, sign me up, right? That's what every guy in here is thinking right now. That's what this God's word. I mean, come on. We need to talk about it inside the church. That's what she's saying. Now, look at, he responds back to her. Remember, this is constant encouragement. He says, how beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes are doves. So first a horse, now you're a dove. Now remember, it's constant encouragement. And she comes back to him and says, how handsome you are, my beloved. Oh, how charming. And our bed is verdant. It means that it's lush with vegetation. Again, odd, but better to have something lush than have it dying, right? And so then he comes back on verse 1 of chapter 2. Or she says, I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. Remember how she started. I'm so self-conscious about who I am, but he's loved her through that. You're making me feel like the most special person on earth. And he says, Like a lily among the thorns is my darling above other women. And there's not a woman on the planet who is competing with you right now. That's what he's saying. And then he goes on to say in verse 3, she says, like an apple tree among the trees of the forest is my beloved among the men, and I delight in his shade. Remember what she was self-conscious about, her skin, because the sun pounded on her. And now she says, with you, I am protected. Man, that's an important verse, right? It's a trust builder that I can sit under your shade and I'm protected by you. Look how she goes on to say, like an apple tree among the trees of the forest is my among men, I delight in your shade, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. I'm not even going to touch on that one, moving right along. Verse 4 says, she says, let him lead me to the banquet hall, and let his banner over me be love. Strengthen me with raisins, which was considered an aphrodisiac. Refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love. She says, his left arm under my head, and his right arm embraces me, and it's getting hot in here, and that's where we're going to stop. Look at, I know odd. I know you're thinking, oh, he made too many jokes about sex. But listen, God created it. I'd rather apply it towards us in a way that, you know, it can be a very difficult topic if there's no, you know, joking that comes through it. This is God's best for us, that two individuals would have body and soul that comes together. It's why when we jump the gun on that, there's all kinds of pain. We're going to continue to look at the Song of Solomon, how it applies in the bedroom and how it applies in relationships, but I want to end with this. In the book of Hosea is a prophet in the Old Testament. And Israel was God's people, but they were prostituting themselves out and they were pursuing everything instead of God. They were pursuing sex over God, money over God, small G gods, you know, idols over God. And God was feeling like a violated lover. And so he went to the prophet Hosea and he said, I want you to marry the prostitute whose name was Gomer. Probably couldn't have been a very successful prostitute with a name like Gomer, but that's another story. He said, I want you to go and marry the prostitute named Gomer. Now listen very carefully as we close. This was a picture of God to us, saying, I want you to go to someone who has repeatedly sold herself against you, and someone who is dirty, and someone who is filthy, and someone who has made mistake after mistake after mistake, and I want you to be wed to her. And the imagery is, this is God's response to us, that we are like a prostitute. Because let's be honest, we have all given ourselves to other things besides God, right? Some of it sexually, some of it in other areas of life, that we have placed other gods in our life besides God. And we're all dirty, and we're all stained with sin, and we've all given ourselves to other things besides him. And yet God, in this metaphor that he's showing here, is like this jilted lover. And we see his anger where he's like, you know what? Then fine, walk away from me. And then we see him saying, ah, but I can't shake you. I love you. And then he gets angry. He's like, you know, then suffer everything that you brought upon yourself. And then he's like, but remember the times we had together, and I can never lose you. Then in Hosea 11, God speaks this over Israel, and I'm going to change the words so it applies to us, because that's the idea. Where God says, when you were a child, I loved you, and I taught you how to walk, and I took you by the arms, but you didn't even realize that it was me. And I led you with kindness and love, and I stooped down, and I fed you. Then he says, but you've turned against me. And then he summarizes, he says, but how can I give you up? How can I hand you over? How can I let you go? Look, the topic of sex in the bedroom, the topic of relationships, we'll continue to discuss that. But the best thing that I can tell you is that we have a creator God who cannot shake you. We have a Savior who says, I can't let you go, regardless of how many times you failed, regardless of what your past looks like, regardless of how dark your skin is, I cannot let you go. And I don't know of anything better than that today. You want to be a better husband, you want to be a better wife, you want to be a better father, you want there to be transformation in you, the best thing that I can offer you is Jesus. The best thing I can offer you is Jesus. You stand with me. Well, we'll see who's going to come back next week. Might have you having church in my house. Listen, I'm pretty sensitive to the things of God, and I'm a fairly conservative person. And in my spirit, there's nothing wrong with talking about this subject openly in the church today. Because if it means marriages can be healthier, and marriages can become stronger, and single people can avoid a tearing and a heartache that will come, then why would we not want to discuss it openly among us? Just pray with me, Lord. I first want to ask that if there's someone here and just that metaphor of you being joined to us, even after we have sinned and we have ran around on you, but yet you can never give us up. If there is someone that resonates with them and today they're thinking, I want that relationship. I really want to know that there's a God who can't quit me. With all of my past, with all of my stains, my dark skin, God, the thought of there being a creator, God, Jesus upon the cross that says, I cannot let you go. And if that's you today, that offer is for you. That is God speaking that over you. I cannot let you go. God, speak it over me. That is an amazing image. God cannot let you go. If you've not done that, after the service, you need to find me so I can talk to you more about it, so I can have one of our leaders talk to you more about that idea, because it is life-changing. Don't leave without it. Don't say, oh, I'll do it next week. Don't dismiss it. If you're feeling that, that's God's Spirit upon you, pulling him to himself, because you're not here by accident. Lord, on this idea of sex and relationships, Lord, build in us what you intended it to be. And Lord, some of us, we need to get back the adhesion in our sexual relationship with our spouse. And help us in that and what that will take. Some single people need to make a decision that from this time forward, I will be pure. I'm not giving myself anymore. So God, teach us in this series, through your word, through what you have to say, that we would understand the gift that you have presented before us. This week, let us look to be participants in the kingdom. As we leave here, let us look to be participants in the kingdom and greet someone and look into how we can serve them. Keep your face upon us and your spirit upon us this week, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.